You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. I'm WFHB News Director Wes Martin. On today's Daily Local News episode, we'll take a retrospective on some of our best reporting from 2017. These and other stories are always available on WFHB's website, WFHB.org. Cook Pharmica was sold to New Jersey-based Catalent Incorporated in September. As Daily Local News anchor Aaron Wagermiller tells us in this piece, no Cook Pharmica employees were notified of the sale until it was announced. Cook also announced the same day it would expand into the abandoned GE manufacturing site on Bloomington's northwest side.
Cook Pharmica sold to Catalent Incorporated this morning. According to separately filed press releases, New Jersey-based Catalent bought Cook Pharmica from the Bloomington-based Cook Group for $950 million. This deal, which was announced this morning, is still subject to federal approval, but could go through within the next 40 days. Cook Group spokeswoman Marcia Lovejoy says the sale of Cook Pharmica to Catalent won't affect current employees.
One thing we really want to make sure that everyone's very clear about is that there are over 750 employees currently at Cook Pharmica, and all of their jobs are secure. In fact, Catalent was very interested in Cook Pharmica, one, for 400,000 square feet available to build in their facility, but also of the expertise that their employees have.
Cook Pharmica employees were not informed of the sale of the company until it was announced this morning. Catalent spokesman Elliot Berger says the publicly traded company bought Cook Pharmica in order to expand their pharmaceutical reach into biologics. These are large and complex biological molecules that are often injectable like vaccines. Berger says Catalent's acquisition of Cook Pharmica comes after the company expanded its biologics production in Madison, Wisconsin.
Cook Pharmica provides an excellent complement to that because they have also biomanufacturing capabilities on a clinical and commercial scale, as well as fill-finish capabilities, which allow that pharmaceutical product to be packaged into vials or prefilled syringes, for example, or lyophilized into powder for future administration to patients. So together, these two facilities kind of create that continuum.
Indiana University Kelley School of Business senior lecturer George Telthorst says the sale of Cook Pharmica to Catalent makes sense for the Cook Group, which is largely a medical device manufacturer.
So for Cook Pharmica to be part of a major medical device company, they were dealing with a lot of different things than most of the rest of the company was. So now belonging to a parent that understands that and deals with that better, I think strengthens them.
Cook Group spokeswoman Lovejoy says that in addition to the sale of Cook Pharmica, the Cook Group has purchased the old General Electric plant in Bloomington. Lovejoy says the Cook Group bought the facility for $6.5 million in order to expand their operations.
Cook Group is doubling down on its device business here, looking to expand manufacturing at that former GE facility. And we're very excited to take a chance at revamping that facility and really making a place of pride for Bloomington again.
Lovejoy says the Cook Group is expecting to hire 500 additional jobs in Bloomington over the next decade. Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton's office released a statement praising the Cook Group's announcement and welcoming Catalent to Bloomington. According to Catalent's statement, $750 million of the nearly $1 billion the company paid to acquire Cook Pharmica will be paid to the Cook Group in installments over the next 4 years.
That was Daily Local News anchor Aaron Wagermiller. In this next piece, Interchange producer and former Daily Local News anchor Doug Storm tells us about a series of inappropriate social media messages from Bloomington's Kilroy's bars. Thanks for listening to the best of the Daily Local News' 2017 coverage.
Bloomington residents are upset over a tweet issued by Kilroy's Recess. The bar on Kirkwood, which replaced Kilroy's Dunkirk, opened its doors for the first time on Thursday. Near midnight on Friday, the business's Twitter account tweeted at billionaire sports investor Mark Cuban, quote, "Come check out your old place. Spoiler, we got rid of the wet t-shirt contest, but kept the underage girls," unquote. Their website states, "Kilroy's Recess is Bloomington's only 18 and over nightclub." City Council member Susan Sandberg told WFHB that she found the tweet to be offensive and indicative of a larger issue in Bloomington and Indiana University.
I think we need more people to be responsible when it's underage drinking and the whole culture of that, because we are a college town. And it's disappointing, let's just put it that way. And I have been in communication with my colleagues on the city council. I've been in communication with the administration to see what, if any, response we need to make to just send the message. This is not okay. It's not okay to treat underage women like that. And it's certainly not okay to encourage the kind of binge drinking that you black out. That's just not acceptable to me.
Followers on Twitter asked Kilroy's Recess if they cared to explain the tweet, which was posted close to midnight on Friday. 8 hours later, Kilroy's Recess responded to inquiries and outrage with, quote, "not really," unquote. Twitter users and Bloomington residents took to social media to voice their concern that the tweet promoted rape culture. Both Kilroy's Recess and Kilroy's on Kirkwood's reviews on Facebook plummeted before the accounts were locked. As of the time of this broadcast, Kilroy's Recess Twitter account was set to private. Marketing director for Kilroy's Recess, Nicole Freeman, posted an apology on the business's Facebook page stating, quote, "We unequivocally apologize for last night's tweet. We recognized immediately that our joke was made in bad taste and quickly deleted it from our account. We take the safety of our customers very seriously and work extremely hard to provide a conducive environment to do so. We've worked with Culture of Care, our employees, and the authorities to create and maintain a safe and positive environment for our patrons, and we will continue to do so moving forward," unquote. During last Monday's solar eclipse, Kilroy's on Kirkwood advertised with a sidewalk chalk sign that read, quote, "The sun is blacking out, so should you," unquote.
You know, this is the kind of behavior that we don't want to encourage in anybody, you know, encouraging underage people to come in and drink until they black out, or encouraging, you know, underage kind of wet t-shirt thing, which in my mind is kind of a sexist comment. So I would just urge everybody who is a corporate citizen in the city of Bloomington to be responsible. And I don't think either of those situations, the tweet or black chalkboard that was advertising, "come on in and black out with us" on the day of the eclipse, that's just not the kind of message we want to send if we're trying to create a publicly safe environment in our downtown.
Facebook users pointed out that although Kilroy's released a public apology, their account still liked posts from followers that stated any criticism of the franchise was an overreaction. Following the Twitter messages from Kilroy's Recess, Function Brewing formally announced via Twitter that they would not sell any of their beverages to the Kilroy's franchise.
I know Middleway House is responding. I know some women's organizations are responding, and I hope IU responds. I know those of us that have been working with the Task Force on Safety and Civility and Justice in our downtown, we don't need this kind of stuff. And I think my praise goes to Switchyard Brewing for their response.
Kilroy's posts have drawn the ire of the Monroe County chapter of the National Organization for Women, whose Facebook account posited questions to Kilroy's in response to their apology. Quote, "Are you open to dialogue around improving employee training, especially for your social media team, regarding perpetuating rape culture and binge drinking? And is the person responsible for the tweets still on your staff?" Unquote. Indiana University spokespeople did not return WFHB's calls for comments in time for this broadcast. The Kilroy's Restaurant and Bar franchise, which owns three locations in downtown Bloomington and one location in Indianapolis, was also frequented by presumed dead IU student Lauren Spearer, who disappeared after a night at Kilroy Sports in June of 2011.
That was Interchange producer and former Daily Local News anchor Doug Storm delivering a report about Kilroy's social media snafus. You're listening to the best of 2017 on WFHB. I'm your host and WFHB news director, Wes Martin. In this next piece, I speak with Dan Wakefield, a longtime friend of Kurt Vonnegut, about five previously unpublished Vonnegut short stories which were discovered at Indiana University's Lilly Library.
I met him in 1963 when I was at Harvard on a Newt Niemann Fellowship in Journalism, and he was living on Cape Cod, and a mutual friend in Cambridge, Mass. Invited me to a dinner with Kurt and his wife and I think four other people, and people later asked me, well, did you and Mr. Vonnegut talk about writing? And I said, no, we talked about Shortridge High School. He graduated from Shortridge in 1940, and I graduated in 1950. And we both were great fans of that high school, and Kurt always referred to it a lot in his writing. In fact, he said, he got a better education at Shortridge High School than he did at the five universities he attended. Three of those he was sent to while he was in the Army to get training for something that he couldn't use in the infantry. Anyway, he has six children, counting three that he raised who were his sister's children after his sister died of cancer, and her husband died the next day in a train wreck, which was very tragic. He mainly made a living on writing short stories for a while in the 1950s when the popular magazines like Collier's and the Saturday Evening Post, they came out weekly, and they had four or five stories in each issue. But that really starts to dry up in the late 1950s, or really the early 60s, when television started getting most of the advertising money. So he had to write other things, and he wrote a number of novels in that period that really didn't get great attention. And then he had a teaching time at University of Iowa, the Iowa Writers Workshop, and he published a novel called Slaughterhouse Five that became an international bestseller. There have been several books of short stories of his. It was just a few stories, and they weren't organized in a theme or anything. So this is the first time that all his stories that he wrote are in one book, so it's quite a large volume. Kurt Vonnegut, Complete Stories. And I co-edited it with a man, a professor at the University of Northern Iowa, who has been a Vonnegut scholar of his work for many years. So he and I devised a way of organizing stories into different like stories of war, stories of romance, stories of science, and then we wrote a brief introduction to each of those categories just so people would have an idea of what the thrust of them was. And included in these many stories were five previously unpublished stories. And those we found at the Lilly Library in Bloomington. The Lilly Library has the Kurt Vonnegut archive, so all of his work is there, and all of his stories are cataloged and in separate folders. And they even have ideas for stories that he hadn't been finished, but we only included stories that he finished.
Are these largely from earlier in Mr. Vonnegut's career?
not always. They were, you know, sent around, and, you know, it's just like anybody sending out stories today. All of them aren't published. Some of them, I think, ahead of their time, maybe. And it's remarkable that only five that he wrote were not previously published. And I think after he stopped writing short stories and just devoted himself to novels, he didn't continue to send out the stories that hadn't been published. He just put them aside. He stopped writing short stories really in 1963. And I think it'll be a real treat for people who, the many, many people who enjoy Vonnegut's work. And I also edited a book of his letters. And I really think from those letters, a person of great loyalty. He was especially loyal to writers and the cause of writers. And he was also very interested in keeping books from being banned. And he always spoke up for writers in other countries that were in political trouble. And Slaughterhouse-Five was, there was a high school in Drake, North Dakota that not only banned the book or tried to, but they burned copies in the high school furnace. And he wrote a very eloquent letter to the chairman of the school board of that district and told him why, first of all, that before books should first be read before they're banned. And there was really nothing that would make this book a candidate for being banned or not being read by high school students. In fact, he's always been popular with high school students because a lot of his stories are imaginative and really sort of give people an understanding, a different way of viewing the world or viewing life.
That was Dan Wakefield, a longtime friend of Kurt Vonnegut, Indiana's most famous modern writer. Vonnegut died in November of 2007. Wakefield co-edited a collection of Vonnegut's work, including five previously unpublished pieces, which were discovered at the Indiana University Lilly Library. Kurt Vonnegut, Complete Stories, was released in September. Support for WFHB comes from Cardinal Spirits Distillery. Located on the Beeline, Cardinal Spirits has opened a new kitchen featuring local, seasonal food made from scratch to complement their craft cocktails. Dinner is available Tuesday through Saturday at Cardinal Spirits at 922 South Morton Street in Bloomington. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com. You've been listening to the best of 2017 on WFHB. I'm your host and WFHB News Director, Wes Martin. School buses have been a major focus of Monroe County residents this year. In this next piece, I speak with Monroe County Community School Corporation spokesman Andrew Clampett about the corporation's busing issues during the opening of the school year.
Difficulties with bus contractor Auxilio Services delayed students getting to and from school last week. Auxilio, which was awarded a $2.2 million contract with the Monroe County Community School Corporation, had originally bid to provide 42 bus routes. But on Tuesday night of last week, the day before MCCSC schools opened, the company alerted MCCSC that they only had 18 drivers. MCCSC spokesperson Andrew Clampett said that wasn't the only thing that went wrong on Wednesday.
Yeah, you know, as of the first day of school on August 9th, we had kind of a few things that caught us off guard. You know, one was our Here Comes the Bus tracking app was not displaying the correct buses or routes, and so or times rather, and so with the inaccuracies of that reporting, folks didn't know where their bus was, or if they did know. That the bus was correct, it wasn't showing that the GPS was in the correct location. So we had to shut down that service the first day of school, and a lot of families rely on that. Kind of coupled along with that is our late bus and bus change text messaging service, where we text families when their bus has been subbed out for a different bus number. That communication tool was down also. And then the third, which is kind of the major one, which we were prepared for with subs, was the shortage of bus drivers that we experienced from one of our contractors. And we had a pool of sub drivers, all licensed and certified, ready in the event that we did have a shortage. And when we did, we ran those routes.
Clampett said Auxilio's driver shortage led to MCCSC drivers having to double up on routes, delaying students getting to and from school. Clampett said the school corporation had been working with Auxilio to make sure enough drivers were available, and since Auxilio is not able to fulfill its contractual obligations, MCCSC said they're looking for additional drivers to shore up their routes for the rest of this school year.
You know, certainly it was not ideal, the first day of school. But, we did have our sub pool ready, and they stepped in and filled those empty routes. And all of that's spelled out in the contract in terms of if they do X, Y happens. If they do Y, X happens. You know, if they run the routes, they get this. If they don't, this happens. All those details are in the contract. And, again, we expect them to fully comply to their contractual obligation part of that contract, and that's where we're at. We're still working with them very closely each day. They have reported that they have several routes or several drivers in the training and certification process, and again, we're making preparations ourselves. We're continually telling people that if you're interested in becoming a bus driver, please look into it. It's something that is a very appealing position to folks who are students at Ivy Tech, possibly newly retirees, maybe they have a CDL and they're looking for full-time benefits. Those are things that are appealing as running a bus driver. There's some vacation and holiday attractions worked into the contract, and so becoming an MCCSC bus driver is certainly a solution to the shortage. Again, we would encourage folks who are interested in it to apply and go to our website and look into that. But a bus driver shortage throughout the year is not something that's new. We have been experiencing these shortages for several years now, and that's just the nature of kind of the turnover of the bus driver position, and we're not alone in that shortage.
Muncie Community Schools ran into the same troubles with Auxilio a week before MCCSC's start date. With parents calling 911 and buses dropping kids off late and in the wrong locations, Muncie canceled the first week of school in order to get their bus routes figured out. When questioned whether or not MCCSC should have seen the bus trouble coming, Clampett said the two school districts are not comparable.
We are a completely different school corporation and setup than Muncie. We do all of our routes in-house. I can't speak for the particulars of why they experienced the transportation troubles that they experienced. I can't speak for Muncie. I can speak for Monroe County. And a week before school was not the first report that we had had from Auxilio. We'd been working with them closely all summer on the number of drivers they had, and so we were making preparations well before the week of school. Again, we're going back to the late spring and the start of the summer on when our preparations began for the first day of school this year. And so that's why our sub pool was so large, because we were ready to go for the first day of school. Now, in terms of the overall reporting of their numbers to us, that number that was talked about, those 32 routes, that was reported, really a week before school, changed in terms of the number of actual drivers that were ready the day before school. At either number, we were ready with our sub pool. And that's why, again, I go back to this always. We're always looking for, experienced and qualified drivers to fill those bus driver roles.
Clampett said that MCCSC has not yet refined its bidding process to make sure that companies like Auxilio, which aren't ready to fulfill their contracts, don't take bids.
As of right now, there is not a bid process open. And so, you know, in theory, yes, you always want to learn from any previous wrongdoing. And so I can't speak specifically to the specs that were offered, you know, that may be offered in a future bid scenario as it's not started and there's not one upcoming. We've got the current year underway. And if and when those bid specs are opened up, you know, that would be something if you've looked at historically when bids are sent out, they're different all the time because of state standards of our own MCCSC specs that we require. And so I guess the answer is yes. You know, we're always looking to improve and to transport our student population as safely as possible. And all of those things will be taken into consideration. But we're not talking about the bid process right now. What we're talking about is the current shortage of drivers and what are we doing to address that. And again, it's making the hiring of those MCCSC bus drivers as appealing as possible.
Clampett said that MCCSC will continue to look for additional bus drivers and thanked MCCSC families for their patience thus far.
You know, it's certainly not ideal, like we've said, the way the start of this school year started. And what we would try to stress to folks is, you know, first of all, thank you for your patience. You know, this has not been ideal. This is not what you plan for when you go into contracting these routes. You expect that vendor is going to meet their contractual obligation. And so you come up with, these backup plans. And that's what we did in this case, is we had those backup drivers ready to go. And our active plan right now is we're making becoming an MCCSC bus driver as appealing as possible, because that's what we have control over.
That was MCCSC spokesperson Andrew Clampett speaking about the ongoing bus driver shortage at MCCSC. For WFHB News, I'm Wes Martin. You've been listening to the best of 2017 on WFHB. These and other stories are available on WFHB's website, WFHB.org. Thank you for listening.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.